Hello and welcome to The Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Whitney Palmer. Today, I am joined by Dr. Michael Recht to discuss the recent partnership between NYU Langone Health and Facebook AI. Dr. Recht is the chair of the NYU Langone Health Radiology Department, and he sat down with us to share the details of this collaboration that has produced MRI images that can be captured four times as fast as standard MRI images, but with the same diagnostic quality. Here, he discusses not only the partnership, but how the team successfully reached this point and what the next steps could be.
Well, tell me first, you know, why did NYU choose to look into artificial intelligence to create a faster MRI?
So that's actually a great question. So we've been working on accelerated imaging for a long time, right? So I started, I'll give you my history. So back in the early 90s, I had done an MR fellowship and an MSK fellowship. And the first thing we tried to do is say, how do we go faster? Because at the time, MR was really slow. And so it really limited how many patients were able to access MR as an imaging modality and what we could do. And as you know, when it takes longer, it's harder for patients. So have you ever had an MR?
I have.
All right. So you know you're lying in the magnet, and it can take a half an hour, 45 minutes, depending on the exam, sometimes even an hour or longer. It's hard to hold still, right? You know, and if you're in pain, it's really hard. And if you're a child, children can't lie still, so they have to get sedated or anesthetized. And that's not really a great thing, so you don't want to do that. If you think about image quality, the faster you go, the better the image quality, because it means patients will hold still easier, right? In the abdomen, where you have normal motion from respiratory motion or just your bowel peristalsis, you get motion. So if you can do it faster without a breath hold, that's easier. And then you think about other parts of the world. So in a lot of countries, even in Canada, right, there's a long wait to get an MR. So in the United States, there isn't, but in Canada, there's a long wait, but you can get it at least. And then think about some of the LMIC countries where they only have a very limited, maybe, you know, a handful of MRs for an entire country. That means nobody can get it. So you've really taken away that entire option for patients. So the goal is, if we could go faster, right, the exam will probably become cheaper, because part of the reason you'd exam, the technical part, is based on how many you can do for a day to capture the cost of the equipment, which is expensive. And you can just allow more patients to get done, and you can expand the use. One of the other reasons we were excited is that I'm a bone and joint imager. And so have you ever played sports? Do you ever get injured playing sports? Have you ever injured yourself?
I have, yes.
Right. What's the first thing? You go to your doc or you go to the emergency room, and the first thing they do is they get an x-ray. And they get that x-ray because it's fast, right? It doesn't take very long, and it's cheap, right? But as an MSK imager, I can tell you that the vast majority, the overwhelming majority of those exams are normal. Because as you know, x-ray can see bone. It can tell you if you fractured, but it doesn't tell you anything about soft tissue. It doesn't tell you if there's a tendon injury, if there's a ligament injury. In the knee, we have all these people who injure their knee. We get an x-ray, there's no fracture, but we can't say what's going on with the meniscus. Is the anterior cruciate ligament torn or not? And then what happens is they have to wait, then they schedule for an MR, and then they get the MR for a large number. What would happen if we were able to do a 5-minute knee MR examination? And it was just as fast as an x-ray, and you wouldn't have to schedule it. So if you came into your ED or you came into your doc and you want it, you could just walk in and get that MR, right? We think that's really better care. So that's been the goal that we've had. And that's true for other types of imaging. So you know acute stroke. So I'm sure you know that now there are ways of treating acute stroke. And that means you have to do intervention. You put a catheter, you can do thrombolytic therapy or take out the clot. But it has to be a certain type of stroke. You can't, you know, it can't be, you know, a hemorrhagic stroke. And so it would be great to be able to use MR. And some people have started using MR, but MR, again, it takes time. And with acute strokes, you don't have time. So most places in the world are using CT to screen those patients. Again, if we were able to go faster, MR would be able to be used. So not only are we making it more comfortable for patients and allowing more patients to get it, but we're expanding what we can do MR for. And I look at it, when I was a resident, when I first started, CT scans, which now take seconds, used to take 20, 30 minutes, right? And I watched them come down into seconds. And our goal is to make MR have that same trajectory, going from very long exams to short. So that's why we've tried to do this. And in the past, there have been a number of ways people have tried to go faster, different types of pulse sequences. The problem is, although we've been successful to a certain degree, we've always been limited, because as we go faster, quality gets affected. And at some point, the trade-off between speed and quality is such that you don't want to go faster anymore, because you can misdiagnose. They're not really the exams that you want. And our goal with AI was to say, can we use artificial intelligence to allow us to go faster without the loss of image quality? So it was not just, can we get the same diagnosis, but can we get the same diagnosis with the same image quality so we don't miss anything?
All right. Well, that's a great explanation of a very multifaceted motivation. So with that as the background then, how did this partnership with Facebook come about? You know, I guess what was the beginning there and then the ultimate goal of coming together?
Yeah, so that's another really interesting question. It's an interesting story. So, you know, it's really Facebook artificial intelligence research. So when everybody thinks about Facebook, you think about the social networking, right? Trending and all that. So they have another, you know, part of Facebook, which is Facebook AI research. And Facebook AI research consists of researchers, and they're really looking at ways of using AI, and not just in Facebook products, but in ways to help people. To say, let's find problems that AI can work with that are challenging problems that we can help solve. And there's a little bit of a natural connection, because the leader of Facebook AI is Yann LeCun. And Yann LeCun, who's a real pioneer and you know, world leader in this, is a professor at NYU. So there's a connection. And they have a big presence in New York. And so they were looking, and the question was, they were looking for ways that they could use AI and, you know, use their skill set. And they were reaching out, and they were looking at health, and they made the connection. And so we met with them. And we had to tell them what we were working on to see if there was something that they felt would be interesting. And to be honest with you, there were three challenges that we had to meet, or three questions we had to answer. The first was there a problem that they felt would have a significant impact? Because they didn't want to really work on something that wasn't going to be impactful. The second was it a challenging problem? Because they didn't want to work on something that wasn't challenging. And they wanted to work on something that we couldn't do by ourselves. And we had started working on this a couple of years ago, probably close to 4 years ago now. And we had gotten to a certain extent, but we weren't getting where we wanted to get to. And the third part, which is somewhat unusual, is they only wanted to do projects which would be open source. Because again, the goal wasn't to make a profit. It wasn't to create a product. It was to use AI to show how it could really improve patients' lives or people's lives and to make an impact. And so when we talked about this project and explained to them what we thought we could do with accelerated MR imaging, they said, boy, this is great. And it's a challenging problem, because as opposed to most AI that you hear about in medicine, which is let us make a diagnosis, let us look for a pattern and make a diagnosis, that wasn't what we were doing here. We weren't making a diagnosis. What we were doing is combining AI and the technical aspects of artificial intelligence and neural networks with how we create imaging and the physics of MR. And it really was only through the collaboration between our imaging scientists, who understood how to create images and understood that physics, our radiologists, who actually could look at the imaging, and the Facebook, you know, researchers in AI, that we were able to be successful. And that's really what we were able to do, and started this project about 2 years ago. And really are excited to announce now that we've done this study, which showed that we were successful. And really that we believe there's really exciting future ahead for AI accelerated imaging.
Fantastic. Well, when it comes to the study and what you've done, kind of walk me through, I guess, from the start, how this was all structured and what you did once this partnership was, you know, off the ground, how you trained the neural network, you know, all, I guess, kind of the nuts and bolts of what happened that got you to the findings. Sure. Or the results that you have.
So the first thing we did is we started meetings. So the first thing is we had to talk to the researchers and show them what we were doing. And those were really great meetings, I think, on both sides, because as a clinical radiologist, I learned a lot about AI, but also I think they learned a lot about imaging. So initially, first of all, you know, they would show us images and they were upside down. They were right to left reverse, right? They didn't really understand what a knee looked like. So first we had to train that. The second thing is, you know, in AI, and people have done this, where you can make images of famous people that never existed, or you know, people that never existed, and they look really real. And the truth is, you could do the same thing with imaging. So sometimes they would say, look, we've done this. This is an easy problem. And I say, yeah, the image looks great, but you've hot hid all of the pathology. So everything that's abnormal is no longer on the image. So the first thing we did was to go through this to teach them what we were looking for. And we would meet literally every week, sometimes more. What we did is we gathered a database, which we made public back in November of 2018, that included 10,000 NEMRs, the images. And we also included about 1,600 raw data, because we were working on the raw data, not in the image domain, but in the raw data domain, or in K-space. And so we worked for a very long time with very, you know, experimenting with different neural networks, where they would come back and say, look, we've changed the network. How do these images look? And we would look at it and say, not there yet. You know, look, there's blurry over here. We've lost pathology over here. It's not, it's too noisy. It's too blur. It's too smooth. And so we did that for a long time with this data set. And then we got to the point where we felt that we had the right parameters. And at that point, we decided it was time for a clinical IRB trial, which is what we did. And our study was really a retrospective study. So what we were able to do is patients, 108 patients who came in because they had knee pain looking for internal derangement, either a meniscal tear or an ACL tear. We scanned them with our normal standard sequences. And then we took the raw data. And essentially what we're doing here is, the way we're going faster, I should explain that, is we're throwing away data. So what we're doing is we're saying, normally we acquire a certain amount of data. Can we get the same quality images when we throw away some of that data? All right, so let's throw away half the data. Let's throw away three quarters of the data. And if we threw away half the data, we'd go twice as fast. If we threw away three quarters of the data, we'd go four times as fast, because we'd only need to collect 1/4 of the amount of data. All right, and if you think about it, we've done this all the time. So do you have a cell phone? My guess is yes.
Yes.
Do you ever take pictures with your cell phone?
All the time.
All the time. How do you save them? So when it asks you how to save them, you save them in what's called a compressed format, a JPEG. And it'll say, how much do you want to save? Do you want to throw away 10% of the data, 90% of the data? And we know that we can throw away a lot of the data once we have a picture, and the picture will look exactly the same. All right? So this picture of the Magellan woodpecker is compressed. But it doesn't look compressed. It looks great. And what we're trying to say is, we know how to do that after you've gotten the data. What we're trying to say is, can we do that before we get the data? So can we learn what data is important before we've even acquired the data? And that's what we did. So we threw away, in this experiment, 3/4 of the amount of data that you usually collect. All right? So we were reconstructing the images with 1/4 of traditional data. All right? And then we reconstructed the data. So we had two image sets, one image set with our standard imaging, and one image set with the accelerated images, where they went 4 times as fast as a traditional scan. And right. And then what we did is, we had 6 radiologists who did nothing but bone and joint radiology. So they were experts, and they ranged in experience from 1 year to 19 years. And they read each of these cases twice, once looking only at the accelerated images and once looking at our standard images. And they were separated by a period of 4 weeks. And that meant that they didn't remember what they saw. So we didn't want anybody cheating and saying, oh, I remember that case, so that's what it has to be. And then we had them grade 19 different structures in the knee. So the menisci, the ligaments, cartilage, bone marrow. And we compared their, you know, diagnoses. They would say whether it was, you know, torn or not, or normal or abnormal. But in addition to that, what we really wanted to achieve, as I said before, whenever people have gone faster, people can always tell that the image quality is not as good.
Right.
So what we did is, we had them grade the image quality. And then, just for fun, we had them say, do you think this is the accelerated or the standard sequence? Right? To see if they could tell the difference. And what we found is that the two types of images, the accelerated and the standard, were diagnostically interchangeable. So it made no difference when you looked at those images, whether you were looking at the accelerated or the standard images. And then what was really exciting to us, and a little bit surprising, is that only one out of the six radiologists were able to tell the difference, to judge whether it was accelerated or standard. Interestingly enough, the only radiologist who could do that was the one who was least experienced. I'm not sure what that says, all right? But then all six of the radiologists, every one of them, said that the accelerated images they thought had better image quality than the standard. And that was really surprising to us, but really exciting, because what it meant was that traditionally, if somebody comes up with a new pulse sequence, if it doesn't look like what we're used to looking for, or if the image quality isn't as good, even if you write a paper saying we think we can make the same diagnosis, radiologists won't accept it. You know, they're used to saying what they like to see. Now, for the first time, we have this pulse sequence that's really faster and that people can't tell whether it's accelerated or not, and I think has better image quality. And because of that, we're really excited that we think this can really be translated into clinical practice really quickly. Now, as I mentioned, it's open source. So that means we've released all of our models. Everybody has access to them, including the major imaging companies. We've been working with them. So they're working, some of them already have, you know, works in progress packages out using this technique. And we're currently doing a prospective study. So instead of doing it after the fact, under an IRB study, we're actually scanning patients who give consent twice, same time. The new sequences only take 5 minutes. It was between 4.5 and close to 6, but an average of around 5 minutes, all right? So it doesn't take very much longer. And then we're really getting close to a 5-minute knee. So again, these are 4 times as fast as traditional images. Now, clinically, I should say that we are already going twice as fast, right? So the ones we compared it to were twice as fast. But we're very, very excited. And the other thing that's very exciting is this is not just relevant for the knee. We already have been working on the brain and in the abdomen and pelvis. And what's interesting is we believe that in the brain, we can go even faster than in the knee. So in the knee, we think we can go 4 times as fast as standard non-accelerated images. In the brain, we're looking at 6, 8, maybe even 10 times as fast, right? So in all honesty, I'm preparing a lecture for a virtual conference. And I was just looking at an image of the prostate that's 6 times as fast. So it went from like 2.5 minutes to 38 seconds. Now, we're not ready yet to do that. We don't have trials on that yet. But that's what we're excited about, because we believe this can really change how we image MR, how most people are doing it. Because there's no IP, it should be able to be translated very quickly into a product and get, hopefully, you know, FDA approval. And then really be used in, you know, many more clinical situations.
That's fantastic. Before we dig into a little bit more about the future possibilities with this, I want to take just a little quick step back, because, you know, you talked about the shortened exam and needing less information to create these images that are diagnostically equivalent. I'm just curious, what's being thrown away? I mean, have you identified like certain aspects of the data that are just not necessary?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So one of the things is you have to understand a little bit about MR physics. And I'm not a physicist, so this will be a lay explanation. But when we talk about that, some people say, well, if you're throwing away data, does that mean you're making up parts of the knee that you're not looking at? But that's not how MR works. What we do in MR is we take images and we take pictures of the knee, but we do it multiple times. Because what we do is we change what's called the phase. And the reason we do that is, you know how MR works, you're in a magnet. You apply a radio frequency pulse, you flip the protons, and then you listen for signal. But in order to locate that signal, so you don't have artifact and you don't put, you know, part of the knee in the wrong place of the knee, you have to do that multiple times, sometimes 256 times, sometimes 312 times, all right? So we're still looking at the whole knee, but instead of doing that 312 times, we're saying we only have to do that a fourth the number of times. And the algorithm can learn essentially the manifold of what the data is. So it doesn't need all of those times in order to correctly localize everything it's imaging. So it's not making anything up, it's not filling anything in, right? It's not as if an artist would, you'd say, I get half a knee, you know what a knee looks like, so draw on the other half of the knee. Because if we did that, we'd be missing pathology. We would have no idea what that is. But what we're doing is we're looking at the whole knee, but instead of looking at all the times that we normally look at it, we can only look at it a lower amount of times, but still the algorithm can appropriately reconstruct that image and put everything where it needs to be and not miss any of the pathology.
So then given all of that, even with all the benefits that this seems to provide, are there any challenges or potential drawbacks to using this accelerated format with less data that's been identified or that could be possible, I guess, at this point?
So I think the drawback is that, in fact, we would miss pathology, right? So I think that's really the question. And that's why we need to do the study. I want to be really very clear. This is an initial pilot study that did 108 knees. We're not telling anybody that this is the answer today, right? Now we're in the middle of doing another study prospectively. We are planning on doing a multi-institutional trial where we have multiple sites with multiple different machines doing the study so that we can say, yes, it's generalizable. But if we are able to prove that in fact, we don't miss any pathology, I don't see any drawback to going faster and having less data, right? I mean, that's really the question. Is the image quality going to be as good? And are we going to be able to make the same diagnosis without missing any pathology? And if our studies, the larger studies, prove that that's true and it's generalizable, I think this really has a chance to change how we image in a very significant way.
Well, absolutely. And then circling back around to that and talking about all of the forward and future possibilities. You know, you touched on brain and some of the other areas. What's the, I guess, the long-term goal for what you're hoping this will be for the use of MRI?
So I guess we're hoping that it really gets used widely in almost every instance, and that it really allows MR to be used in a much different way than it's used today. We really want this to be walk-in MRs. We really want MR, you know, right now, if we do a 5-minute knee MR with some of the other workflow changes we've made that we've written about with dockable tables, we should be able to have a 10-minute slot for an MR. If you can do 10-minute slots in MR, that's really going to change things. And I think, you know, people ask me, is it really going to change the cost? And the answer is, I think it will, because I think, you know, insurers, the government will look at it. And right now, as I said, if you can only do one MR an hour, if you're doing cardiac MR, or two MRs an hour, in order to pay back that machine, the cost of an MR has to be pretty high. But if we can go and really do 6 an hour, right, think about how much we can drop the cost. Now, the professional fee should be the same because it takes us just as long to read it. I want to emphasize that. But the technical fee should drop, and that should allow us to use MRs. More people should use it. We should decrease waiting times. We should be able to do it in more parts of the world. The exam should be better because you don't have to worry about motion. Patients who are claustrophobic, who don't want to be in the magnet for long periods of time, probably it's not a bad thing if you only have to be in there for 5 minutes, right? So I think it really changes the whole picture. And again, for people who can remember what CT was like in the 80s and what CT is like today, we are hoping that we see that same, you know, impact on MR in the future by going faster.
All right. Well, you know, talking about the decrease in time and the decrease in cost, those are obviously benefits for the patient. And then the time aspect obviously being, you know, a benefit for the radiologist. But what are some other things that radiologists can potentially look forward to as being a benefit if this does kind of come into the clinical environment? How could this overall change things for them?
Well, I think one of the things as radiologists, and I would tell you the reason I've always wanted to do this, I gave you the example first, is reading a lot of normal exams and realizing that we're not helping people is frustrating, right? So if we're able to use MR and eliminate exams that, you know, have radiation for patients and that aren't really giving answers, I think we feel better. And it's much more satisfying for us to know that we're making a difference and we're doing the appropriate imaging at the right time. Now, you know, AI is obviously going to affect everything we do as radiologists. So we haven't really talked about that. But I think in this aspect, it's allowing us to do the right imaging and help patients really early at the right time. And I think, you know, that's what we're trying to achieve.
All right. Well, then going forward with this partnership with Facebook AI, what's the next step? You know, you said that you've got other things, other irons in the fire. Which one's coming up next? And then I guess the further you
go. So we're working on the brain. There's going to be a brain challenge at NeurIPS in October. We've also released a huge number of brain MRs and raw data. And we're doing this challenge because I think, you know, we want to prove that this technology works or this technique works in the brain. And we're really excited about that. And as I said, the right after that, we're going to be doing the abdomen and pelvis, which is challenging. But we're hoping to do the same thing there where it should have significant impact because of the inherent motion that you have in the abdomen.
All right. Well, Dr. Recht, I appreciate this. Is there anything else about the study itself or the way the technology works or future applications that we didn't touch on that you think would be kind of an important point for people to know about?
No, I think you really got all of it. And they're great questions. So, you know, I think you captured the essence of what we did and what we're trying to do.
Wonderful. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you, Dr. Recht, for joining me. And thank you for listening to The Reading Room. And as always, visit www.diagnosticimaging.com for the latest in radiology news.